welcome to Wampum.Codes. I'm your host, Amelia Winger-Bearskin. Wampum.Codes is brought to you with generous support from Mozilla Foundation and the MIT Co-Creation Studio. I interview Indigenous and Native artists, activists, technologists, coders, innovators, inventors, and otherwise pretty cool people. And I will let my guest introduce herself.
My name is Morningstar Angeline. My entire name is Morningstar Angeline Wilson Chippewa Freeland. I was born in Santa Fe. I am Diné, Blackfeet, Shoshone, Nez Perce, and Latina. And I am a filmmaker, actress, writer, aspiring producer, performer, lyricist. I don't know. Sometimes it seems like it's never ending.
That's amazing. Well, and you're also from like the tribes that have, I feel like, the best powwow gear. Like, you could just pick one of those. Oh man, I feel like they have the most unique like dresses too. So you're just like, oh, I'm gonna be Nez Perce today. That's pretty rad. It's a good right? powwow set you got there.
It is, and it's a shame because it's one of coming from so many different tribes. It's hard. I would say impossible to represent them all, but, you know, that tribe, I probably know the least about the side of my family that comes from that tribe, and kind of, you know, trying to reestablish those roots is definitely a priority.
Yeah. So when you go to powwow, which one do you think you'd represent more, like fashion wise, obviously, which is all I care about. Okay. But yeah.
Aesthetically, yeah. Aesthetically, I'm definitely, I would say pretty much culturally and aesthetically, I lean pretty Diné Navajo, yeah. But, you know, and then a lot of people take issue because I don't speak a lot of Navajo or barely any, and I can just understand a little bit. And then the language that I do understand is mostly Spanish, and there was a time where I could speak it a lot better than I do now. So it's funny, you know, it's not like where these linear things were just one thing. I have a lot of languages that I should learn.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, that is true for all of us.
And yeah, I had a couple maybe people, I'll do that in the quarantine.
Hey, there you go. You could do that right now. Probably a lot of people could teach you, just cause they'd be bored and want to talk. So that would be cool. Like an immersion.
Yeah.
I've interviewed a couple people who are studying, really, you know, either teachers of their language or really deeply studying to be fluent right now. And I really commend them. It's so hard. I'm really bad at learning languages. I did live in Costa Rica for 5 years, and my son is Indigenous Costa Rican. And we spoke only in Spanish, like, for the first 5 years of his life. And it is so much easier when you're, like, totally immersed and there's no option. Just speaking.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what
it forces you.
It totally, I needed like that total like kick in the pants of like, oh really, you want something too bad, you know? Figure out how to say well, that's awesome. So someday we'll both learn like all of our languages. That'll be great. That's awesome. And obviously you'll look great in your Diné and Navajo outfits for the future powwows that will come, or the virtual powwows that will be now. Ooh, we're living in a weird time right now. Yeah.
Very weird.
Yeah. But
oddly okay.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that.
I feel very conflicted. I haven't really wanted to be one of those people that's like, I'm doing great. Because,
you know, people really.
Exactly. A lot of people are not. And I am sure my time when I am not doing great is shortly around the corner. So it's just taking it day by day, you know, and trying not to make anyone feel shamey or shamed for feeling like this intense withdrawal from society and from, you know, from people. Like, I think we kind of have a luxury here that we usually don't really have, where we're kind of artists are kind of a pro at staying home. We're a pro at, you know, working on our own. But even us, it's like we're all going to find a time and a place where we're going to need collaboration, whether it's feedback or actual like someone else participating. That's where I think this is really great. You doing this at this time is perfect. as a way for us to reach out to one another while still, you know, behind these closed doors.
Yeah. No, it's, I've always been really obsessed with sound, and I guess I grew up in a time where I was fully online at the age of like 10, because I was a ridiculous hacker and like so obsessed with this like new thing that was the internet, because I'm pretty old. So I was like back when the internet was new. And then also, I also grew up at a time when people would call each other on the landline telephone and talk for hours. And then your dad would be like, oh my God, no one else can use the phone, you know? And like, he'd pick up the line and be like, man, just to like embarrass you and be like, go to bed, you know?
Yep. The string that's like from room to room. I don't even know how those cords made it, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like my son, he was 18, like he's never had that. Right. So he's like, remember when cell phones used to have really long cords? I'm like, okay, well, okay. Not really how that worked, but okay.
First off.
Cell phones with really long cords. That's amazing. Yeah. But yeah, I still remember that. And I miss it. Like I miss that, like just listening to someone talking. And yeah, I don't, you know, with, I love texting, obviously. I love emojis. I use them way too much, but I do miss the just talking on the phone with somebody, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought I'm going to try this podcast thing just so that I can actually talk to people for a really, really long time. But,
well, and it's nice because it, even though like, you know, it's not out of the, how do I say this? We're not in the, quote unquote safe space of you and I talking. I like podcasts because it also, hopefully, I know not everyone does this, but kind of forces you to actually think about what you're saying, because it's not just this other person who's going to interpret it. It's also going to be, you know, anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. And I wasn't a super podcast person. I would always listen to like these very intentional podcasts, like, you know, Radio Lab, or I love like Dolly Parton's America, but they're like very highly produced sort of like, you know, media. And my partner is way more obsessed with the podcast of just like two chicks talking and like laughing. And I'm like, oh, what are they talking about? And he's like, I don't know. I just listen to it. It makes me feel less alone. And then they make me laugh and I'm washing dishes. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. That's like way cooler than
that's
like
my kind of podcasting.
Yeah. And I was like, that's totally how I felt. As soon as I started listening to the ones he was listening to, I was like, oh, that's the jam. I like that. That is really cool. It's not radio. It's a different thing, you know? Which is cool.
I don't quite know what to call it, right? Because that's what I find myself listening to. I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts, and it ends up being just like two people discussing these really dark things. But also, I find myself, you know, I'm doing housework, I'm driving, I'm doing all of it, and it does make you feel like someone's there. And in this time, again, I feel like this is just going to be the undertone of what I talk about in terms of the quarantine. And I'm finding myself, a lot of people are doing Instagram lives now, a lot of musicians are doing DJ sets, and I find myself, I'm just on the couch and I'll leave my phone on, and it's making me feel not only less alone, but not alone at all. And that's really, I feel like crucial right now, especially for us, even who are comfortable being alone.
Oh, totally. My friend Rena Anawake is doing sound baths on Instagram Live. So she just plays all this incredible music, and you just like put, I just like put it on. And then I was like playing Zelda Breath of the Wild, like listening to the sound bath. And then every so often she's like, hey guys. And I'm like, oh man, this is so cool. I feel like she's in my house. It was really beautiful. So yeah.
That's awesome.
I don't feel like I got to see her every day, because I moved from Brooklyn to Oakland recently, and so like I miss my New York friends, but now I feel like I see them more than I have.
Yeah,
that's really awesome. And you have had a really, really busy year, so this must kind of be also a little like, not nice, but like maybe needed a little rest.
I think overdue for sure. I don't quite know how long it's been overdue, but it's been overdue. And it is one of those things where I have often found myself saying, I just wish I could just be alone. I wish I could just have time to work on my own projects. And then this whole week, my mind has just been, well, you got what you wanted, so what are you going to do with it? And trying to combat that also with the quote unquote self-care of, you don't have to do anything. You can just take care of yourself, and being alone in your apartment is enough. But that's not how my brain really works. My brain's like, no, after a couple of days, you need, you know, I'm bored. Let's do something. So, it, with that being said, it was overdue and it feels really great. As far as last year's projects, it's funny. You don't really notice how busy you are until someone asks you and it's like, look back, and you kind of look back at all the chaos behind you or the accomplishments or both, you know, you're just like, oh, that's been going on.
Yeah. Well, maybe so for some of our listeners who don't know, would you mind like talking a little bit about some of those projects? Either the films you've starred in or the ones that you've directed or your production project.
Sure. Last year was a really good year in terms of it was not just one thing where I just found myself just acting or just working on crew. I worked on a couple features or one feature that I starred in. I'll start with the acting was a Keyhole Garden, and that's shot in New Mexico, and that stars Zoe Saldana, and that is directed by her husband, and that is a border story that was very emotional and very interested to see how that movie's going to turn out. And it was an absolute joy to work with Zoe Saldana. She was, you know, acting, you're only as good as your acting partner. And she, I hope, brought out the best in me. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And then there's an HBO series that's actually going to be coming out in April. I think this will stay on the timeline just because it's not a theater project. So they'll probably just stick to their timeline. And that's a Derek Fion France series. And that I'm really excited about. That was, I can't even tell you, that is my top director. So for that to have happened, as small as a role as it was, I was like, I can die happy now, guys.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool.
So that was really good. Yeah. Yeah. And he was, how do I describe? A lot of people, he did Blue Valentine, Place Behind the Pines, excuse me. And he just has he's known for long takes, a documentary style approach. So that was just a really good learning experience. And that, I think, was all my acting, at least towards the end of the year. And I was simultaneously working on a Netflix film called Army of the Dead, and that's a Zack Snyder project. That one I was assisting him on, and it was an absolute joy. One of the best jobs I've ever had. We shot in New Mexico, we shot in New Jersey, and it's a post-apocalyptic zombie heist movie. And
that's
it was
amazing.
Oh my god, it was so much fun. All the blood rigs, all the special effects, the best so cool. crew.
Is it out yet to rewatch?
It's funny because it's so timely, and you know, now we were in post. I left a little bit early for some family stuff, but it's so timely, and I'm sure they're probably rushing to get it out at this point, but I know Netflix has shut down, so I don't know. Whenever that comes out, I'll be talking about it a lot because it was just so much fun.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see that. That sounds amazing. I bet it will be really beautiful. Oh, I love like when things are like apocalyptic and beautiful. I feel like your film was like that as well, right? it's beautiful and apocalyptic. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and then another thing was just that project. So did you have a chance to watch it?
I like sped through it because I was trying to share the computer with my partner who was making the outro music for this episode. So I got to watch like clips. I like did like a highlight reel like every 10 seconds. So after this, I would like to watch it actually properly. But just from the visuals, I was like, this is beautiful and apocalyptic, which is really cool. So what about that kind of story? I mean, I love apocalyptic stories. I also was reading on your website that you were one of the voices of Red Dead Redemption 2, which is amazing. I'm so obsessed with that game. And I'm like, oh my god, this felt like another story that could have happened in the like a future universe of Red Dead. So I don't know, I'm just like super geeking out on it. Really, I can't wait to watch it again, not speeding through.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a little breakdown, especially since it has no screenings now. So I've been debating just putting it up online, but for reasons I'll explain in a minute, I'm a little nervous about that. So Yacht Ayabena is a short film about a 20-something Navajo girl who is living in a post-apocalyptic world with her father. And when we enter their life, the father has contracted this unknown virus and he's passing away, and then he does pass away. And because of that, she's left totally alone with his ceremonial items. And in this case, it was through the lens of the Navajo culture, Navajo tribe. So it was his medicine box. It was all of, you know, all of the things that he used for ceremonies. And she ultimately doesn't know how or what to do with these. So the story is about her grappling to come to terms with the quote unquote legacy that was left to her through these items. And also, you know, that's the tangible element, but the intangible is something she can't escape. So it's just about her grappling with that part of her identity that she can't really get rid of. And the story was born out of my father passing away a little over 3 years ago. And it was very, it felt very sudden. It was a beautiful death in the way that a death can be, in that he was surrounded by his family, but it left me feeling stripped and raw, completely skinned is what it felt like. And I didn't recognize the world around me. And so through that, I really wanted to encapsulate the feeling of grief, like not what it looks like, not what it can, you know, all of those things, but really just what it feels like. And it feels apocalyptic when grief is that hard. It's like you have to reintroduce yourself to the world. You don't recognize it. You don't recognize people. You don't recognize yourself. And so the post-apocalyptic environment was just a way for me to set the tone in a genre that I absolutely love, of how alone that feeling is. And, you know, after we did the film, and it stars Shandine Yazzie, Roger Willey, Coralie Begay, very small cast, very small crew, all Native crew in production. And then we only had a few non-Natives in post. And, you know, it's just, now I watch it. A friend of mine said, have you watched your film lately? You know, because you just kind of put it away. And I watched it, and it hit new notes even for me seeing it now, just because I wrote it originally not knowing what the virus would be. I was like, hey, I'm not against it being the government, you know, and there's moments where it's kind of implied that it was an intentional virus. And it made me feel even more alone, but made me feel better because once again, my father's gone and we're going through this almost, you know, where we're being quarantined in all of these scenarios, and it's living out in this way where I never thought it would, at least not so quickly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do, you know, and a lot of people have kind of mentioned this on my podcast when I'm interviewing them, is that as Native people, we have this, we do have like a history of trauma with a disease that can wipe through our community. Right. And most people have that. It's somewhere in their distant, you know, relatives past, anyone who's made like long voyages to change countries or all these kind of things, or immigration stories, or, you know, so, but with Native people specifically, about it being like here on this land and then having a disease that's introduced from outside, we have feelings about it. Right. So, I like the genre. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you can go ahead.
I said, I really like the genre of post-apocalyptic stories. I like the genres of sci-fi and speculative futurism, because I feel like sometimes we can say things that are really true now, but are just in a feeling space. They're not like, they don't have to have a lot of sense, because you can just say, oh, well, in this world, that makes sense, and then go from there, which is really great.
Yeah.
It could be something that, especially in this time when there's a lot of fear, but it's a fear of like an invisible thing. We're not even getting a lot of visuals on what it looks like, right? Because it doesn't look like, right? So yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to
the post-apocalyptic, it's just such a rich genre. And even if all of this wasn't going on, you know, it's a genre that keeps giving. And I've been drawn to it for a long time. And it's odd because those types of films oddly give me comfort right now, as opposed to giving me more fear. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm sure that's not true for everyone, but it's kind of this dose of, we've known about this possibility and we know it can get worse. And so this is our chance. And I kind of like that it's putting it in the responsibility in each of our homes for us to, you know, self-quarantine, to do what we can to protect our elders. And that, I mean, not that just elders, we're finding out that, you know, other people get sick as well, but that to me is something that as Americans, Western civilization does not carry the same way a lot of indigenous cultures do, in that we need to protect our elders, and not only that, but also talk to them and communicate with them so that we do not repeat, so that we gain this knowledge of, outside of language and culture. It's really how to live or how not to live. Those are two very crucial things that I think we should pay more attention to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And have you been able to sort of chat with some of your elders about what they think? I would be curious to know. I mean, if you couldn't share, I don't want you to, like, you know, breach any confidences, but, you know, is there any kind of feeling that you've had with being able to stay in touch with your elders through this crisis?
A little bit here and there. It was mostly, I came back from LA to spend some time with my grandparents, and shortly thereafter had to make the decision not to go see them. Yeah. And I think most of my elders who I'm in regular contact with are actually those who haven't been in touch or haven't had the privilege to be in touch with their culture as much as myself. So it's mostly, I think for them, the communication is more about an exchange of joy and an exchange of person to person. Unfortunately, the person who I often went to for, you know, cultural or story or, you know, lesson, more tied to indigeneity, was my dad. And that's been something that's been kind of hard, of course, over the years to kind of grapple and come to term with, is that someone who I relied on for information, and not only information, but trustworthy information, is gone. And so I think as young people, and I think irregardless, we're going to be faced with this, you know, depending on who, a lot of us are going to lose, you know, elders in our families and the stories and things like that. And I think it's also accepting that you're worthy of searching out those stories elsewhere. And you're going to have to do work to decide what stories are ultimately worth anything, or if they're mostly being delivered through ego or things like that. And that can be very hard because, you know, Native people are not perfect, and there's plenty of, of problematic people who will give you wrong information. So I think it's going to be hard. So sorry to, I guess, answer your question. I am in contact with them, but I think for now it's mostly just being limited to, because a lot of them are quite older, like in their 80s, 90s, and my priority right now is just making them feel good, because I think a lot of older people feel really scared too, you know, and that's kind of a sad thought.
I know for my mom, it is very hard for her to quarantine because she just loves to be around people. You know, she's so social. She's a storyteller in our tribe, so she just has to always be talking to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know? And then she, you know, I try to get her to talk to my son because obviously she wants to always talk to the grandkids. So, yeah, I mean, she's going to be like that before the quarantine, after, during, you know. She's she's just like, but I just went to a little potluck. You're like, oh my God, what are you doing?
I had this really, really dark thought about my dad. And I had this like sense of relief thinking about how he wasn't here to go through this, because he would be super susceptible and, you know, not in the best of health, and just it could be a very bad scenario. But my thought was, can I cuss? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
How the fuck am I? How would we keep him home?
Oh,
he
my
was
God,
the most social person. There's no way. There's no way. He'd be like, I gotta go to Walmart. I gotta go to the post office, you know?
Totally.
I'm like, I don't know how a trip to the post office can take an hour, but if he knows the whole town, he would just stop and he'd talk and he'd hold hands and he'd hug. I'm like, yeah.
I know my mom is like, and she's also kind of on some other level of, like, you know, her intuition, you know. I think she like navigates the world in a different way. She'd be like, no, I know who to talk to. And I'm like, oh God, she probably does, but like it's her stress level.
Yeah.
I don't know. My son will be saying the same thing when I'm that age. I mean, he says the same thing now. Like, he can't, you know, like, what can you do with your mom? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
They'll just do
How old is your son again?
He's 18. Yep. He always used
How
to
is
say,
he?
He's great.
How
I mean,
is he feeling?
He's one of those, you know, he really, really is into gaming and game design and tabletop gaming and tabletop design. And when we were in New York, he used to work at like Brooklyn Strategist and the Museum of Moving Image, teaching kids, you know, to do tabletop or game design of, you know, digital or whatever. He was just really into teaching kids how to do that and how to make their own world, story worlds, right? And he's here and he's just like doing what he normally does on the computer, leading, you know, huge rounds of Dungeons and Dragons online for people. And now suddenly he has a lot more participants, you know, because all these and I've invited all of my friends' kids to say, like, hey, my son is just running these games for free for strangers. Like, your kids can join. So he's trying to kind of get one together with his cousins. He's done one for my my boyfriend's family. So they all have a Dungeons & Dragons group that he runs for them. Like, they organized it through him. I didn't even have anything to do with it. So, yeah, he's like in, you know, I think the thing he misses the most is 7-Eleven slushies, which, like, fair enough. They're amazing. which, you know, that's real. But like, when he was thinking, he's not going to be, you know, thinking about college for a little while because he's kind of taking some time off. But he used to always say, I don't know, I'm worried about if I go to college, I'll wonder what you're up to, if you're partying too much, if you're just like out drunk in a gutter. Like, come on, Mom, I have no idea. I can't leave you and go to school. Like, Tristan, you know, like, that's what I'm supposed to say about you when you go to college. He's like, yeah, but you just are like, you can't control your mom. You can't tell her what to do. I'm like, yeah, that's so true. That's how I feel about my mom too. So
that's awesome, you know, though. I mean,
wild women.
I think that's awesome to have. I don't know, for a young boy to have that that portrayal of womanhood is awesome, though. I think. To give that idea where it's like, because you by yourself are amazing and you do so much and you work in all these different fields. And I think like when we were talking about what I was going to talk about, I was like, all right, you got to put my brain on something, because I will talk about anything. Do you want to talk about, do you want to talk about sex? Do you want to talk about food? Like, let's go.
Let's do this. That's amazing. I mean, I can't wait to get off and tell my son about you being in Red Dead Redemption 2, because he is like such a fan. He made me play that game with him for so long, and it, like, I kept getting cold. I'd have to wear like 5 blankets just to play the game because it was like so snowy in the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
So, what is that like, being a voice of a video game?
It was interesting. I mean, I really want to get into voiceover work. I think it would be so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome.
I just think it would be so much fun. I mean, you to completely let go of like the physicality of it and just focus on voice was really fun. And I haven't played the game. I'm not too much into video games, but I guess I haven't really given them a solid shot since I was in middle school. But it was fun. It was really fun. And looking at who plays the game and, you know, getting feedback, it's just been really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, games are, I played them when I was very small. I never had like a a console or anything, because I think we were pretty poor for that. But then I would go to friends' houses and play on their consoles, so I like had a little bit of that. I was someone who was deeply online though, because I was those like little hacker kids, and but all of our game world was in text format. It was like MUDs or just kind of chat rooms, or a lot of these like role playing where we're all we're doing is texting to each other, like this is what's happening in the game, pretty informally. And I didn't really encounter games again until my son is like, since he was little, he was really obsessed with it. And then finally at like 8, he like sat me down and was like, you know, I don't feel like you take this seriously, Mom. And I'm like, what? I was like, the fact that you play video games too much? No, I don't take that seriously.
That's and, adorable.
Right? And then he was like, no, this is really important to me. Like, you have art and you can talk about it. And then he like gave me this sort of like, you know, critical theory, post, you know, modern take on video game as a genre, as it pertains to society. You know, he was like, very, cause like I was a professor at the time. So he was used to hearing me like spout all this nonsense. So he was like, I can do that too, but about video games. And he just like gave me this lecture. And then after that, I was like, okay, I take this seriously. This is your like chosen field, you know? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, they're pretty incredible. Like they have as much like if you kind of look at the world of film and you're like, yeah, some of it's trashy entertainment. Some of it is like social critique. Some of it is, you know, speculative fiction or historical reimagining. It has all that, right? So it's all the same kind of things we have in any other genre of storytelling. They have that in gaming, which is really cool. And weird.
Yeah.
Really weird. And it has something else too.
I guess.
I don't know what that is, but it's like you could feel it.
Yeah, I mean there is a validity to it for sure. And I just haven't really ventured into it. I guess for me, like video games are the equivalent of watching the Game of Thrones. I've never seen it. Probably will never watch it. But it just feels like such a time investment.
Oh yeah.
I think that's what it is. I don't want to play video games, because what if I like it and that's all I want to do?
Dude, I mean, real talk, yeah. I mean, I couldn't finish Red Dead because it started taking up so much of my time, and it was like right at a time when I was actually had to do things with my life.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there was another time when like we had a really bad snowstorm in New York. Pretty much everything's kind of like shut down, not doing anything, and I started playing like Zelda Breath of the Wild and totally finished that game in way too many hours. I'm like embarrassed to even say how many hours I played that, but that was amazing. So there are times where you're like, wow, what a blessed time I got to live in Hyrule.
Yeah.
I think St. Vincent the other day was giving an interview. Someone like sent it to me, because obviously everyone knows I love Zelda Breath of the Wild. And the interviewer was like asking her about like the thing that the film that she's like, you know, promoting, and she's like, yeah. And then she kind of like drifts her way and like stares like off to the side. And they're like, so what else are you doing with your life? She's like, oh, I've spent about 200 hours in Zelda Breath of the Wild. And then she just kind of stared off again. You could totally tell she wished she was playing it right then and not doing the stupid interview. That's great. Yeah, so maybe someday you'll have like way too much time to play something ridiculous, but if not, it's also okay. You'll just start.
I'll just be the old lady.
Yeah.
Who's obsessed with video games.
Yes. And you'll just be like,
I just got a great visual in my head. I want like the neighborhood kids to be scared of the like kind of, she always looks aggressive, old Navajo indigenous yes. lady who has a ton of dogs. She's never been married. She just has a bunch of animals and plants, and then she just plays video games. And little do they know, those little kids in the neighborhood are actually playing the video game with her.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, that is absolutely, and also you'll be one of the characters there anyway, so they'll be amazing. Yeah, I used to be a professor at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, and I took my son to this like I don't know, it was in the music department, because I was giving a talk about like John Cage or something. I brought my son, and he was so mad because he's like, why are you bringing me this boring lecture? And I'm like, you'll see, just a minute. And then at the end, this other woman comes up, and she's like in the opera department. She gives this talk, and he's like, wow, that voice sounds really familiar. And I'm like, yeah, just a minute. And then afterwards, I'm like, hey, this is my son who I wanted you to meet. Can you do the thing? And she is the voice of GLaDOS, which is this famous game called Portal. And she just does the GLaDOS voice for him. And he almost fell down, like, night. Like, he just couldn't even believe that this beautiful old lady who's, like, you know, lecturing about opera and, like, the Academy is, like, the voice of his most favorite character of all time. He, like, just essentially died. And she did the
whole thing,
like saying his name and everything. He just was dead. He just like couldn't even. He's like, we need to leave now. He was so happy. He's like that. When he's so happy, he's overwhelmed. He's like, we have to leave. So that was great. So that would be you, obviously. In addition to being, okay, like, yeah. I get it. Like, you are a very famous actress and accomplished director. And I'm just like talking about video games. It was okay.
Hey, I'm into it. I told you, you can get me to talk about anything. Whatever you want to talk about.
Well, you know, what I mean, I don't know. It's acting is so fun. I'm glad that you're getting to try doing like some of the voice stuff, which can be like a weird freeing thing to just act in your headphones, right? On the microphone.
Yeah, yeah. No one's really paying attention to your movement. It's basically do whatever you have to do to sell the voice work. And that can be almost anything. Like a lot of my for that game, I remember I had to scream and cry in a few moments, and I was like, "This is amazing! You're paying me to scream in a soundproof room." Sure,
oh, hell yes! I mean, I would pay to do that. That's awesome.
Anytime.
That's so great. That is so great. Well, I mean, what other kind of fun things have you done acting wise where you felt like really happy that someone made you do a weird? I mean, most acting is weird, right? Because it's all totally simulated. If you were to watch it, you'd be like, this is a motion of insanity where someone's saying the same thing over and over again to someone who's not there, right? Like, all of it is totally crazy. But what has been really fun? Like, what weird shenanigans have you been made to do that was actually, like, really fun?
Weird shenanigans. I just love the way you're like, acting is weird. Put that on a t-shirt. I'll wear it.
I mean, it is. I mean, it's not normal.
It's not normal. It is so strange, but my God, I can't imagine doing anything else. It is the weirdest thing. I mean, actually, I don't think acting is weird. I think auditioning is weird.
Good one.
All these elements is really weird because it's kind of like you're put in this testing scenario where either you pass or you fail. And then once you get through that test that has no rhyme or reason, you get through and you're on production. And I don't know, I guess I can name the most mundane scenes that I've done, and they're amazing and ingrained in my mind just because of the collaboration that maybe happened in those moments.
Yeah.
I think when you're there with another actor and you both kind of agree to actually leave your ego at the door and just surrender to whatever weird world that has been placed before you, whether or not it's carefully built, because some movies it's like you're like, how is this a thing when you guys don't even know what kind of movie you want?
Oh yeah.
And so you're kind of on this ship with no captain and you're like, yes, we're doing this now. And then there's also the version that's very well crafted and there's a lot of intention and, you know, all of these things. But either way, those two, the chaos and the organization, does not guarantee a good product. So when you're on set and you're there and you're acting, I guess the shenanigans are just like, all right, you down to just get weird? And then the other person's like, yeah. And then you do, you know, I don't know, not to go down too much of a rabbit hole, but just things that I've learned with acting and really enjoyed is, I think acting has taught me a lot about consent, in that when you get into that space, whether you're rehearsing or actually doing a scene, if you're, you know, a respectful actor and, you know, you're doing the craft well, there's some dialogue that happens between you between takes where it's like, is it okay if I get closer? Is it okay if I touch you a little harder? Are you comfortable with this? You know, and that has taught me a lot about consent in my everyday life. And that's really fun. And then once you agree to those terms and you're like, okay, let's go. And you're just, it's like sparring, you know?
Yeah.
And, as far as weird scenarios, you know, there's been a lot. when you work in the indie realm, it's going to get weird. And then when you also add native cinema to that, it's going to get so much weirder.
So good.
And I love it. I mean, yeah. I have no desire to step outside of the indie world, really. And I do want to keep working on native cinema. So quote unquote native cinema, but just projects that are kind of centric on those voices. And, you know, did you get a chance to see Black Horse Low's feature Fuckery by chance?
No, I didn't. I really want to see it though. Oh my God.
Okay. I'll ask Black Horse if I can send you the link. Because it's good quarantine shenanigans. And that movie is the ultimate native stoner movie.
Yes. Oh my God, I need that.
You know, it went to Imaginative this last year. Oh, it's ridiculous. It's like Pineapple Express meets, like Forgetting Sarah Marshall meets Black Horse Low. Like,
yes.
If if you know native cinema, you know Black Horse's work. And it's beautiful and shit gets weird real quick.
Which I super appreciate, because you know, the way that like white people make movies about native people is so solemn and boring, and natives are so weird. Like, we're not normal and funny, and like,
so weird.
You know, that's cool. Like, like that. I love it.
Yeah. So I'll give you just a piece of the movie. So one of the first things my character does is she's sitting in a room, like her house with her boyfriend, and she's eating hot Cheetos while smoking out of a huge bong, which is my real bong, by the way.
Amazing. That's generous
it's
of you.
Massive. Massive. Like, anyway, and so I'm smoking out of that, and then my boyfriend is playing his guitar. And he's like into it, and he's playing, you know, this weird metal grungy shit. And I'm just like into it, smoking my weed. And then I'm getting ready to leave, and he's like, "Hey, I got something to tell you. I love you." And I proceed to like get nauseous and like don't really know what to say. And then after a short beat, I throw up all my hot Cheetos on him, and I leave.
That's so, I relate.
So, I was like, and that's how the movie starts. And then, you know, there's so many things, and it was such a joy to make. And it was one of those projects where every day I was like, isn't this what film should be? You know, and I've experienced it on big, big shoots, and I've experienced it on tiny little indie projects, but where everyone has agreed, not just the actors, that like, we're all here because we believe in this, because it makes us feel good, or it has a good message, or whatever. And so that was really fun. But that was definitely one of the scenarios where it was like, what is even happening right now? What are we doing? I'm like mixing tomato sauce with hot Cheetos and putting it in my mouth. I'm like, what are we doing?
God. Oh my God. That's amazing.
But it was really fun. And then I also did a film called The Incredible 25th Year of Mitzi Bearclaw.
Yes,
it's quite the mouthful. But
I really want to see that. I've seen the trailer, and like a couple of different trailers, and it looks amazing. I would love to hear more.
Thank
about
you.
That.
It was fun. It was, we shot it up in Sudbury, in Canada, and I still don't quite know how to talk about this. I'm still learning. Bear with me.
Yeah.
But I guess what drew me to it first and foremost was that it's a story about a 20-something Native girl who lives in the city, the story isn't through a cultural lens per se. It's about a lot of things, but the culture is kind of put at the back. It's way back there. So that was drawn to me. And the character is independent. She's an entrepreneur. She's trying to go to a fashion design school, and she is promiscuous. Like, she's dating, she's living her life, and learning in the ways that I find real young people, you know, 20 somethings learn, which is by making mistakes, doing these things and living imperfectly. And so it's about her, I guess the synopsis for this film would be, Mitzi Bearclaw is working in Toronto, trying to get into fashion design school when she gets a call from her family, asking her to come home because her mother is just getting a little bit more ill. So it's about her going back to her res, which is in the bush, and it's on a fictional reservation, but she goes back and, you know, she reunites with not just her family, but her old fling, and, you know, she's followed and has the company of her spirit guides, and there's this whole like borderline sci-fi element.
I saw some of that in the trailer and I was like, what, she's in a glowing cave, oh my god. That's amazing.
It gets crazy. Again, native cinema. Mm-hmm. It gets weird. Mm-hmm. But it was so much fun, and it was comedic, and that's what I really liked about it. Like, it felt authentic in that it wasn't, you know, it definitely has some serious beats in there, but overall, it doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's just a coming of age story, which I don't think we have enough of in native cinema. You know, I know plenty of people who are working on those types of scripts and stories, but I think that's something that, you know, me as a young person, a young Indigenous person, could have used as an authentic version of what it how eclectic growing up native in America can look, or in, you know, Canada as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I do feel like this is the first, I don't know if this is true, because you always feel like that if it's true for your timeline of your own life, that it might be universally true, which is probably wrong. But I feel like it's the first time that people in your generation who are natives actually have quite a bit more representation, not maybe the in parody,
yeah,
but there's a lot, and I love it. Like, I'm really excited to have so many people on the podcast that are in your generation, who are doing just such incredible things in all different areas. And I think it is a cool space to amplify your voices, rather than, like, it's like we have this gap of like our parents and then maybe that the like lost Gen mm-hmm. Xers who like maybe did some things,
yeah,
and then like millennial generations doing so much cool media in all different directions, whether it's virtual reality or film or acting or performance or, you know, video games or whatever, and they're just doing such cool things. I'm like, I'm very excited to amplify the voices of this generation, and then the one under you too. They're even weirder.
Oh my god, I can't even imagine how weird I'd be if I was one of them.
Oh my god,
I am so grateful I came in right before things got even weirder, and it's just getting weirder. I like how the theme of this talk is just becoming weird.
What is the weirdest thing?
But it's, you know, it's true, and I don't know. I mean, I, for example, the thought of having children, that is a thought where I'm just like, I don't
weird.
Know how I'd make
Believe
sense
me, that's
of this weird.
Having a child is possibly the weirdest
weird.
Thing you can do. Yeah, no, it's, I can verify how weird it is. Oh my god, it's so weird that like my son was one of those kids that spoke really early, like too early. Like, there's a
yeah.
reason why children shouldn't speak until the age of one. That's
for
it's
sure.
a really
for
good
sure.
reason for that, because, and I'll give you an example, when he spoke way too early, he was like, Mom, do you remember the first day I met you? And I'm like, oh, that's so cute. I don't know, what are you gonna say, baby? Who's like, you know, I don't know, 7-8 months. Well, what is it, baby? And he's like, oh, I met this monster and I punched it in the tongue and then I fell out of its throat and I met you. And I'm like, dude, that's totally way too creepy. You know, I'm like, you're not
yeah,
supposed to like,
yeah, yeah.
back your own birth to your mother. This is why you're not supposed to talk for a year, because that's freaking weird.
It's true. It's true. People underestimate the creepiness of a child.
They're way too, they're so creepy. Like, just perfect. You know? Oh my god, and like they hear you and stuff when they're inside of you, and they'll like do little games where they like kick their feet and then you're like, hey, I'm talking to you, and then they start giggling and you can feel them giggling. It's weird.
Oh my god.
They're just insane.
Yeah. Yeah, and then so it's like, it's weird when they're in you, it's weird when they're out of you, it's weird when they grow up and they're like away from you.
Yeah.
See,
all of it
just
is
sounds
not, it's so weird.
Weird.
I mean, I understand why my mom's so weird now. I'm like, oh, the process of doing that made you even straighter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I try to give my mom a break for all of that because I'm like, man, I know it's weird by nature, but I'm such a, I don't know. God bless my parents because I haven't been by any means a bad child or I didn't really go through any quote unquote bad phases, but I was still crazy and weird and very outspoken and very, you know, very, very outspoken. I'm
not
so I'll just come in rushing back.
So good. So good.
Yeah.
No, it's that's very true. Kid, you know, we're weird. Our parents are weird, obviously. I mean, my kid is so weird in the sense that he tells me everything and has zero shame about anything. These are like things that
that's
I would
awesome.
Like, well, I mean, maybe, but have you ever been on the receiving end? I'm like, dude, God, have some shame and keep that stuff to yourself. Oh God.
Whereas
my mom, those things, I would just like rather die, which is, you know, it's bad. Like you should be able to have someone in safe space. You can talk about all the things about your body and stuff, but like, oh, he has no shame. He's like, why shouldn't I just talk to you about this actually, mom? He's like so level headed and I'm just like squeamish and dying in the corner. So, you know,
we're all trying to find that balance. I haven't found a single person who has struck it though. So when you find it, let me know.
Oh God. But I think that new generation, bless them, they will be unafraid of their vulnerabilities, you know, in the world.
That's all I hope for, you know, I don't know. I feel a lot of sympathy for kids growing up right now. I grew up, I mean, you were talking about when you grew up and what technology was like around you. I mean, so you were probably, because we don't have a huge age gap, but
no.
I came in when, you know, I remember when we first got our first desktop and it's massive, you know, the big gray one, it's absolutely massive. And it was only for my dad's work and things like that. And then maybe around end of elementary or middle school, MySpace really got big. And that was a really cool way because they allowed, you know, coding was a part of it. You could really personalize your profile. I was
sparkling
all
gifts.
About that.
Oh yeah. Same.
Yeah. Oh, all the sparkling gifts.
Oh,
I can give you my MySpace playlist of all the songs I had. That and then AOL Instant Messenger coming in and like changing the game and then being that broke person who, you know, our family didn't have, we were okay, but we didn't have money. Like I didn't have an iPhone until I was in my 20s. And, you know, so there were a lot of things where you kind of were behind the curve with technology if it was expensive or whatever. But thinking about that and how hard MySpace was for me growing up and how it complicated things and, you know, the idea of sending photos and the idea of sharing very intimate things when you don't quite know the consequences. And then I think about the kids today and that's ultimately my point is just I don't know how to navigate it. I'm still learning. So I have absolutely no idea how to tell a child how to navigate it and how not to take that as how not to interpret that as a reality because it is a reality now.
Yeah.
You know,
well, luckily
we're
they
all
don't take anything seriously.
true. Although I took everything seriously.
I know. I mean, they do. It's like they're really sensitive. That's why the Zoomer, Zillennial, whatever you want to call them, generation is like they put their heart on their sleeve. They're very you know, honest about their emotions, and they put themselves and they make themselves vulnerable. But they also like they definitely don't take the inner like very frequently. I'll be upset about something. I'm a great mom here. I'll be upset about something I read online or like somebody said something to me online. I don't know, some ridiculousness. And my child will be like, but you know, it was on the internet. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, yeah. So it was on the internet. And I'm like, yeah. What do you mean? He's like, you cannot care about anything on the
internet.
You're
like, no, that's the point.
You cannot care about it. It's impossible. You're wasting all parts of your energy. You cannot care about the internet. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
And so if people like troll me on Twitter or whatever, he's just like, give me your phone. Like I can take care of this, you know? And he's just like, in two tweets, they just leave me alone, you know? Cause he's just, they're kind of like, they have an immune system to it or something, you know? They're like vaccinated to it or something.
Yeah. Cause they don't, it wasn't, I don't know. I don't know. We should ask one of them.
Yes, if anyone knows, please call me and tell me. Yeah. Or just tell my son to tell me, because he doesn't want to always tell me.
Yeah. I want to know. Tell him that chick from Red Redemption needs to know, because
trolls
can still make me cry.
Oh my God. I know. He's so good. He's so good. Although I had this troll. I have this Twitter account called Stupid Hackathon, where I make fun of stupid technologies. And I was like saying all these really funny things that I thought I was so funny, and I was getting all these like, you know, retweets and responses, and I'm like, oh, I was on a roll. And then all of a sudden this person makes an entire copied account of my account with my same user photo, everything, but then calls itself Stupid Hacks Bro, whereas I'm Stupid Hackathon, he's Stupid Hacks Bro. And then he starts making jokes about my jokes that are way funnier than my jokes. And I'm like devastated. And like, every time it happens, I'm in my room and I like scream. I'll be like, what? He did it again. He like took my joke and then did it three times funnier and then made another joke, and oh God. And I'm just like screaming in my room, and all of a sudden I hear this like giggling psychopathic 10-year-old in the next room, and I poke my head out and I'm like, are you Stupid Hacks Bro? And he starts just laying on the floor dying of laughter.
Are you serious?
Of course he is. Of course he's Stupid Hacks Bro.
Oh my God.
So, you know.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't even know how I would react to that. I don't even know. Because that's literally the picture you just painted is my worst case scenario. Like someone like duplicating my Instagram page and then adding cool little comments or captions that everyone loves and is like, oh my God, who's this chick? She's amazing. I would be so pissed. Only to find out it's my child, I would be more offended, I think.
I know.
Who do you think you are?
So I thought, you know, well, I mean, on the one hand, I'm highly flattered because I'm like, well, I made someone who's funnier than myself. Like my role in the world is done. I've completed my journey, you know, on the one hand.
No, true that.
But on the other hand, I'm like, oh my God, you're funnier than me. And everyone thinks you're funnier than me. Oh my God, devastated. But
it would take a while for me to rebuild after that.
He is a good,
he really would.
He can be a good weapon, you know, if you ever have trolls. But then sometimes the troll will troll you. So, you know.
Yeah. That's so good. Oh my God. That's so, so good.
See what I mean about it being weird, being a parent? It's not okay.
Yeah. See, and I know, I feel like I would be such a strict parent. I just feel it in my bones. Like I see, I don't know. And I don't know if that's good. I mean, I turned out all right. But I'm sure there's a compromise to be struck. And I just feel like I would have that, like, I don't know, same stuff I got, where it's just, yeah, very strict household, you know, you're raised to be independent and all of those things. But I don't know. And every child, I firmly believe every child, despite whatever, you know, parenting is given, like, there really is something too, I think, like, a person coming out with the, you know, their personality already somewhat established before we start to steer it in the many different directions it can grow into. But it's so interesting to watch my friends with children right now, and, you know, they're... Some parents are getting exactly what they want, and other parents are—they're like, "What is happening?"
No, I think they absolutely. I mean, my son came out is the same exact human being as he is now. Like it's just the same way that he views the world, the things he finds funny, the things that are worth his time, or things that are not, or just his general vibe. It's like since he was breathing oxygen, he's the exact same. It's like I have so little influence over his personality. I hope the only influence I have over him is like, oh, well, you know, this is how you cook this thing, or like, this is how you can like teach them skills. And you can also hopefully, I think the most important thing I could teach him is how to be someone that people love, you know, so that he can always have friends and a partner and all that kind of stuff. So I can be like, hey, you know, people aren't going to like it if you do this, you know, or like, you know, maybe, you know, and he's very empathetic. So luckily that is like, no problem, but like fostering that empathy, like, great, you being empathetic towards that friend, that was great, do that more, you know, that
kind of especially as a man, it's like, that's invaluable, you know, it's completely invaluable.
But yeah, his personality, I had like, feel like a zero effect on that. That was just, we came with that one.
And it's, my mom says the same thing about me, and, you know, we certainly steer them as not only parents or just as community members. But because I was thinking about how much unlearning I've done in the last, you know, 2 to 3 years, just in terms of my place in society and the inner monologue that I have playing in my head of why I shouldn't be in certain spaces, why I'm not worthy of being in certain spaces more particularly. And just those things that we'll take with us, you know, that were kind of learned as opposed to innate things in us. And I don't know, it's a hard balance to strike there too, because I feel like we do need to constantly be aware of our privilege and how much space we take up in certain places. But also, it's hard for those of us who are can be very insecure and think, well, for example, I didn't do any writing, script writing or directing or producing, because in my mind, I was like, you just don't do that. That's not something you do. And that's as far as my thought process went. If I never questioned it, I was just like, and I know that didn't come from my household, because I have a sister who's been working in it. My parents were very supportive of it, you know, even, coming out, like things like that, where it's like, where did the shame come? Because I know it didn't come from home, it came from other places, and unlearning that of how you know, you can try things. Just because you try something doesn't mean it needs to be seen by the world or digested by the world, but at the same time, you won't know until you do it with how it hits home for people or how it resonates with people in their heart. And I think that's what's so cool about this access, going back to technology, of sharing things, is that, you know, you can quietly collaborate and motivate your community, and then from there it blossoms into all these other things. But first, I think it's very hard, especially for, you know, minorities and people of color and people who are somewhere on like the queer gender spectrum, all of these things, it's harder for us to find the motivation and the worth in ourselves to actually do it. So that's something, it's like where I've started doing music as well and doing all these things. And these are all things I've wanted to do, and I'm finally letting myself do it. There was no one sitting there at the door to like, this is where you make music in this room, and you're not getting in, Morningstar. Right. Get out of here. There's no one. And so I finally have been exploring it, and then the concept of sharing all of it and not expecting people to think it is groundbreaking. You know, I think just sharing it and thinking, I'm releasing this, and if it hits home, it hits home. If it's not about what it's going to do for you, it's about what it did for me. And, you know, I think that's really important, because I think that's what art is. I think we come with all of, you know, the world and the commodification of art on a mass level, it's hard to create just to create. But I have found that film now is like my work. That is the career I never want to not have. I love film, and I'll do anything. I will clean toilets. I will do anything as long as I'm on a film set.
Yeah.
And then, but coming with that commodification of it, where it is a job, I've had to dig elsewhere, whether it's through my writing, music, or poetry, whatever, just to do something just because.
Oh, absolutely.
For no reason, you know, like, And that's very hard to come by. People will call you crazy too.
I don't know. I think I've always had to have that. I think especially, I started off my career as a performer. I was an opera singer and then went into theater and like musical theater and spaces like that. And
okay, wait, what?
I know, it's I'm like a weird life, but anyways.
Amazing.
But you know, there was this thing that, you know, I love performing on stage. I love performing for a live audience, but it does mean that you have months where you're not doing it, right? Like in between shows, or and that not being able to express myself and perform, like
exactly.
Sure, I can rehearse on my own and I can learn German better, or I can do whatever thing that'll help my craft, but I don't get that fix of like getting in front of an audience and like and being with my fellow people and hearing their voices with my voice and all that magic that just totally overtook me when I'm in a company. I would just get so like, oh my God, I have all this energy that is not going anywhere. And that's when I just started side projects. And really a lot of the side projects ended up becoming the main project sometimes or not. But I can't ever stop. And I decided I wouldn't ever let the decision to have it stop be someone else's, right? Like it's not going to be a director that's
exactly.
Like, you're not cast. So I guess this year you just don't get to have that magical connection.
Yes.
With your creative being like, no, no way. And it can't sit in somebody else's decision pile because it's so important to me. I have to always continue to make. And so I think that if you are in film, which takes a long time, I mean, not always, you can have a really, fast kind of indie film.
Yeah.
But usually it takes a lot of planning and it takes, it doesn't happen just like, oh, I want to do this and you do it tomorrow. And then with performing the same, you kind of get someone accepts you into the cast or not. And so you have a person that's deciding if you get to do this amazing fun thing that you love. And so it is good to have like your improv troupe or your music or, maybe your painting or whatever thing, kind of keep going with it. I am like that in a crazy way. Like I have to have so many outlets because otherwise that creative energy goes to just, nonsense shenanigans. So I need to like keep it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I mean, I'm the exact same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And I guess we all have felt that, that really painful thing when you don't get cast or something and you're like, I want to be part of this family, and it's more than just like, oh, this other person got this part over me. You're like, yeah, but I need that family. I need the feeling. And luckily we can get it in lots of different ways, which is really cool. And I think you do that too by organizing people and saying like, okay, if someone isn't, if I'm raising my hand and no one's picking me, I can also be the one that picks other people and make my own thing. And that's great too, which is really awesome and empowering.
Yeah. I did a lot of organizing last year before going to LA, and it was just so gratifying. It was so, so gratifying. And it truly just spoke to that idea that, uplifting yourself truly means uplifting others. Like if that's what you're going to say you're doing, you can't do that without doing others, especially when it comes to being a minority. Like just knowing that I was trying to do something meant I had to ask for collaboration and ask for help, and people were always willing to help, and it was always reciprocated. You find ways to give back to one another when money isn't really something that you can, isn't a luxury either of you have. And you start trading things, it unlocks something there that is hard to get on a mass level unless you're tapped into your community. Totally. And it's so, so rewarding and it feels so good. And it's just a really good feeling. And out of everything, I feel like that's something, that's maybe one of the things that I'll start to miss most when I start getting a little bit bored these coming weeks, is just organizing and trying to find ways to give back. A really tough thing for me right now is I want to go do things. Yeah. I want to like go help and, go to the reservation. And I keep having to tell myself that is not what you should. That if you want to help, you need to stay home. And my mind is slowly coming around to the idea of accepting like, okay, you're not lazy for staying at home. You're not this, you're not that. You're doing what you should be doing. Because I do have this thing with authority where if I believe the authority thinks I should do that, I have to question it first, and I have this deep, intense inner monologue.
Yeah.
And then after I grapple with, okay, I will listen to you, and that's what I've been doing, is now I understand, and I believe, and I know the reasons why I need to be home. And I guess that's part of what's making it easier at this point, is just knowing that I'm doing what I should be doing.
Yeah. Well, that's really great to hear. I feel like you're reassuring yourself and me. I'm like, thank you. I'm trying to do my best.
It's hard. It's hard out here. It's weird, yeah. And it's hard.
Yeah, it is. It's weird and it's hard. I mean, thank goodness we're still allowed to go outside. I would lose my mind. You know, couldn't go for walks or whatever. I hope that you do. I mean, earlier we were talking, before I started recording, we were talking about animals in quarantine, and I'm really glad that I get to torture my cat. I mean, not really torture my cat, just my presence is torturing her, because she's like,
exactly,
having
love
all this space.
Presence.
Yeah she's used to like, you're still here, oh god, but she's okay, she's coming around. But you know, I'm really glad that she's here. I hope that you're able to adopt a foster puppy or cat, so that you can have a little person to hang out with, because they're so great.
Yeah, I need someone to be weird with.
Animals are so weird, and they get it, and they judge you, so that's good. Like, if you're weird, they'll judge
exactly.
You.
Exactly.
You need that. You don't want someone who's just like, it's okay for being weird. You need the side eye of like, are you done? Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I miss that. I miss that, like, are you serious? And then they just walk out of the room, like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're just like, great, I'm stuck with a crazy person. And you're like, okay, cat.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Excuse me.
Like, have you seen where your leg just went over your head? And like, what? She's like, that's normal.
I don't know if you saw that, but I did.
Yeah. Oh god, my cat judges me so hard. But you know, it's good. I'm glad that I have her to keep me in check, and to be sometimes crazier than me. Like, sometimes she just runs hysterically through the house making a yowling sound, and then just lays down, and it's like it didn't happen. So you know, I appreciate freakouts, you know.
Definitely. I'm like waiting for my freak out. I'm literally that person looking around my own apartment like, when is it gonna happen? Oh, I don't know.
I don't either. I feel like, oh,
when it I love how deeply that resonated with you. I'm just going to hang on to that. I'm not the only one who's just quietly like, is it going to be today?
Oh, no. I definitely feel it. It's like there's a time clock going up above my head at all times.
Yeah.
You know, like one of those Instagram filters or something that's just like counting down above my head.
Yeah, I'm that woman who's like calculating. Remember her, that meme where numbers are around
her,
and she's trying. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out the math of when I'm gonna cry and not stop crying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know, it'll feel amazing and it'll feel good, but it's gonna come out of nowhere.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I say this from authority, since that happened to me yesterday. Buying groceries online, and like, they had no pasta, and I just like, it just like, my eyes, something was wrong with them, and I'm like, I don't even freaking like pasta, like I don't even like it. Oh, and then my face just started leaking everywhere for no reason. Don't even like pasta.
I'm sure mine, I'll let you know, I'll hit you with a DM, and I'll be like, today I cried about this.
Does, and I
know that that's this weird life.
It's really weird.
This human experience just keeps getting weirder and weirder. But I'm thankful for things like this, where I'm like, all right, I mean, anyone who says they're not weird is a liar. So I'm glad that we can sit here on a phone call and acknowledge it.
Oh yeah. I mean, my boyfriend would always tell me that, like, Amelia, you know, normies are the weirdest, right? And I'm like, no, I don't know. I'm just so weird. He's like, you're really committed to being weird. I get it. But the people who you think are normal are much weirder. I'm like, maybe, I don't know. But maybe he's probably,
I just
right.
love the idea that there's this, like, because I'm not the best at commitment, so I do like this idea that I could throw whenever someone tells me that. I can just be like, well, I'm committed to being weird, and I take that relationship super seriously.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I really do. Yeah. No, I once had a therapist in New York, and I was, you know, he's like, I feel like you're really committed to being weird. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I feel like we have a healthy relationship. I don't know. Like, yeah.
For sure.
Sure. I mean, me and
I've never felt more
tight,
sane.
You know, yeah, we're really tight. But then he's like, well, why do you think you're so weird? And I go to tell him my life story, and he just kind of was like, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, it's a little different. Like, yeah, I've earned my weird. Come on.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's fun.
It's fun. Oh my God. Why would you live any other way? Man.
Exactly.
I don't want to be one of those people that like sees other people being so far out there and being like, oh, I wonder what that would feel like. I want to be like, oh yeah, I've been there. Mm-hmm. I did that like 2 years ago. That was fun.
Yeah. That is the best feeling. Yeah. I remember, total side note, and I'm sure, I don't know how long we've been talking, but side note, I remember going to a music festival for the first time, and I saw people being so weird. Guaranteed they were on drugs, but I wasn't fixated on that at the time.
Yeah.
They were just being so weird with their movements, their dancing, all of it. I mean, from the head to the toes, it was so strange, and not anything I would do, but I, after like 10 minutes of looking at it, I was like, you know what? You inspire me. Like, and that was it. And, then, yeah. And I can still remember the weather that day, what they really look like, and you know, yeah, what was happening there. But I think in those moments, I was like, if you're here in a moment, like let's say, you know, whether you're out and about, wherever, if you're having a moment and you feel genuine joy and you feel the impulse to express that joy through body movement, through vocal, whatever, why the hell aren't we doing it?
Oh, yeah.
I don't. And that's what I've had to let go of, is just like, if you're feeling joy, why do you feel shame in expressing that joy?
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, come on, we're doing that all the time. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's so rare. Why am I shoving it away like it shouldn't be there? Like, isn't that, you know, that's what we're living for.
Yeah, totally. 100%.
Yep.
I was supposed to have this in digital, I can't even talk anymore, Indigenous Digital Delegation at MIT in April, where I was going to invite everyone from my podcast to come and like, give this talk with a delegation of elders from around, mostly Canada, like Canada Film Board and all these kind of like Canadian film funds. But of course it was canceled because of the COVID-19. And,
yep.
Or not canceled, it was postponed to the fall. And so I was thinking of, instead, on the date that I was supposed to do it, MIT asked if I would like to do the panel that we were going to do of the podcasters live, instead virtually, kind of in the same like Zoom format. And so I wanted to see if you might be interested in it as well. I think it is, oops, I'm dropping my phone here. I think it's April 28th or 29th. Let me see here. And obviously you can tell me later too. Oh yeah. The 28th. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, man. I mean, my schedule is completely open. Nice. I resent how open my schedule is, because
I know, right?
Now I just, yeah, I appear available for any and everything, but, I can tell you now, I can do it.
Great. All right. Awesome. I'm going to invite everyone who's been on the podcast so far. So hopefully everyone can do it, but we'll just do this kind of same thing, but all together, rather, you know, like having like 8 of us kind of talk, and it'll be for a live MIT, like virtual audience. But then I'll also record it and make it an episode of the podcast. So, and all of you have like, you know, different backgrounds around the universe of like film and VR and art, but all in different directions. So I think it'll be pretty fun. And a lot of people are from the Native Lab, so you'll know them. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, I will definitely invite you to that as I get all of those details soon. MIT is just kind of figuring that everything out right now, because, you know, they had to close and all the students have to leave. So they're kind of like in a moment. So I feel like next week will be the one to like get all the details. It'll probably be noon on that day.
Cool.
So that'll be fun. That'll be like part 2 of our group.
Yeah, into it.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't done one with more than one person, so I'm looking forward to that. That'll be awesome. Hopefully, I get to just like kick back.
I mean, probably. I'll be the quiet weirdo who will just say the occasional thing.
Same. I have a friend like that. He like is so quiet and just kind of says like one thing here and there. Then he'll say one kind of funny thing and you're like, oh, that's funny, that's really insightful. And then 3 days later he says like something related to that funny thing 3 days ago even higher. And then 3 days after that he says it again. It's like the last part of the joke and you're on the floor dying. It's like such a long game type of humor.
That's what I aspire to be. Right? I'm here for the long game at any time.
Yeah. I really appreciate his kind of humor because you'll know him for like a week and be like, that bro is so quiet. And then you're like, oh my God, hysterical. But like low key.
Yeah.
Just out of nowhere, whispers it in your ear and you're just like, okay, I'm dead. Like completely dead.
Yeah.
So good.
No, those are the friends we all need and deserve.
I know. I hope you get to meet
him. If I could be that friend, I would. But yes. I don't know. When I'm someone too, laughs like, much at of a something spaz. I say, I'm like, oh my God, I got lucky.
I know. I'm too much of a spaz. I'm like throwing it out there everywhere, hoping something sticks, you know?
He's just, yeah, I think I'm the same.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hope you get to meet him someday. He's in this thing called the Futurist Writers Room and is very, very funny and witty. But yeah, I feel like that's a writer thing that they like, they're very careful and economical with their words, right?
Yeah, exactly. You gotta be.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me.